Hi, friends, and welcome to the By Faith podcast. My name is Christine Hoover, and I'm so glad you're here. This season on By Faith, we are talking about the ins and outs of vocational ministry. As you know, we're getting closer and closer to the release of my new book for pastors' wives called How to Thrive as a Pastor's Wife. I'm really excited to get this resource in your hands because I believe that every pastor's wife is a faithful servant and leader in her own right. If you are a pastor's wife, know that you have great influence on your church, your community, your family, and your husband. And I know that you find joy in seeing God move in the lives of others. But here's the thing. I know you also face unique challenges that too often go unnoticed and unaddressed. And at times you may feel you can't talk about your struggles even with those who are closest to you, which can leave you feeling alone, depleted, and misunderstood. I know these things because I've experienced them myself. And I believe God has more for us. That's why I wrote this book. I wanted to come alongside you as an understanding friend, one who offers encouragement and guidance, but also gives you practical tools for cultivating a meaningful personal relationship with God, your husband, children, church, community, and other women. Relationships that will sustain you and help you thrive. Friends, I'm currently working on a few corresponding resources that will release along with the book. So if this is a book that resonates with you, head over to my website, howtothriveasapastorswife.com. You can pre-order the book. You can send a link as a hint for your Christmas list or enter your details letting me know that you want a reminder when the book comes out. I'd be happy to remind you. I'll put a link to all of that in the show notes where you can easily find it. Okay, guys, today I'm excited to introduce to you my friend, Tristy Fisher. Tristy serves as a pastor's wife at Grace Bible Church in College Station, Texas. I have known Tristy for many years and am always so encouraged by her love for the Lord and for making disciples. You're going to get to hear all about that today in our conversation and also how she maintains and cultivates her spiritual vitality. She touches on a lot of things, including friendship, how we can protect ourselves from resentment and anger, and how we can get started studying the Word if we don't know how to do that. A few notes about this conversation that I want to highlight. One is that Tristy calls me Chris at certain points. So if you're wondering who Chris is as you're listening, that's me. Second, she mentions journal questions and a resource for Colossians, and I've included those in the show notes because I know you're going to want to refer to those. Okay, friends, here is my conversation with Tristy Fisher. Enjoy. I'm super excited today to get to welcome Tristy Fisher, who we served in the same town many years ago, College Station, Texas. And she's just somebody I look up to so much in ministry. So welcome, Tristy, to the podcast.
Thank you, my friend.
Can you introduce yourself and tell my listeners a little bit about your context?
Sure. As Christine said, my name is Tristy Fisher. We're at Grace Bible Church in College Station, Texas. My husband, Brian, and I have been married 25, almost 26 years. But I was on staff with Campus Crusade for Christ here at Texas A&M, and he was a pastor when we met. I swore that I would never marry a pastor because I thought that they were boring or cheesy or whatever. And the Lord must have laughed. And so we fell in love, been married 25, almost 26 years. We have two kids. Ben is 20 and an Aggie here at Texas A&M. And my daughter, Joy, is 16 and a half, and she's a sophomore in high school. Grace is a Bible church, and what started at one campus is now on. We just opened a fifth campus. So God is moving huge, huge, not only in College Station and O'Brien, but not only in Texas, as both Christine and I know, but he is moving huge to draw people to himself in a broken world. Mm-hmm. And so with 72,000 Aggies in this town, we're busy. But it's fun too to see young families move back to College Station because they want to raise their kids around what God is doing and drawing people to himself, building them up in their faith, and then sending them out to do the same thing.
Yes.
So, but Christine and Kyle, we have loved them for years and years. My husband respects Kyle. I adore Christine. And she's one of my very favorite authors too. And we love their three boys.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for that plug. College Station is a really unique place, a great place to be and do ministry. And I just feel like when I think of College Station and I think of the people doing ministry there, you and Brian are pillars in the community. I mean, just when I say pillars, I mean solid, been rooted there, been persevering and enduring and and you've been there for so long, mm-hmm. and you really have such an impact on that community. And we just always, we didn't serve at the same church, but mm-hmm. we just always were very excited about what was happening at Grace, very thankful for the people at Grace, mm-hmm. and so grateful for y'all's leadership there. And I just remember when I first, you probably don't even know this, but when I first came, when we came to College Station, my husband was on staff at a different church from where you guys are. And I was really thinking through, what am I going to do? And I knew the main thing I wanted to focus on was discipleship, making disciples. Mm-hmm. And that came from Tristy Fisher. That came from, I used some of your materials that I got through a mutual friend. And just, I knew that's what God was calling me to do, but I didn't quite know how to do that. And so we used your materials, and I just thought, I emulated you because I was like, this is what I want to be in ministry. This is what I want to give myself to people the way that Brian and Tristy Fisher do. So we're just thankful for the ministry you've had to Aggies for generations. And I'm excited for my listeners to get to hear from you, because you are there has to be a foundation for that. There has to be a foundation for decades of ministry. And that is our relationship with the Lord. And you're a person who's very passionate about that. And it has a vitality to you. And so I just want to learn from you. So here we go. Shall we start?
Shall we start? And everything you're saying, it just reminds me that one of the ways to walk with Jesus closely is to remind yourself what he's already done. Mm-hmm. And so what you just said just takes me right back through that and makes me give him thanks and praise for what he's done. So that was wonderful. Thanks, honey.
Well, spiritual vitality is such a foundation for a pastor's wife, especially because of the demands and the challenges of ministry. And I'd love to hear from you if you could give an example of how that's been true for you, and maybe some truths that God has used to sustain you for these years in ministry.
I love it that you use the word sustain, Christine, because I think that's perfect. And a couple things. One is, I think before you even begin life as a quote pastor's wife, you have to understand your identity. And so I think that's the, when I get calls from women around Texas, around the country, that they're like, hey, I'm a pastor's wife. What do I do? And for me, I literally had the image of a pastor's wife as a woman with big hair, which I kind of unfortunately do fit that part, but a woman with big hair in a like suit from Talbots and who played the piano. Like I thought that's what it was. Well, God routed me a different way into this gig, in that I was on staff with Campus Crusade here at A&M and was evangelizing, discipling college girls when I met Brian. So in a sense, one of the biggest things, my prayer, my hope is that women take away, if not just from our time together, throughout, you know, all of us in ministry right now, is that your identity is not necessarily pastor's wife. Yes. Your identity is a daughter of the King. You have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And we all know what that means. That means not that you've been baptized or confirmed or did good things or didn't do bad things, but that at one time in your life, you received him by faith. You realize you could not save yourself. You said, come into my life. I accept you. I trust you. Thank you. And you knew you became a child of God at that point. That's your start off. It's not your identity as a pastor's wife. So pastor's wife is your calling, but your identity is a daughter of the King, as a daughter of Jesus. And so that's what marks you. So when I go and I'm filled with the Spirit because I want God to do something in my town, and I go to CVS, I don't love people there at CVS because I'm a pastor's wife. I love them because I'm a daughter of the King and a missionary of his love. Yes. So sometimes age and stage of life, you may be single, you may be a married pastor's wife, you may have kids, you may have babies, you have adult children, whatever. There are some things that never change. And one is your identity as, and whether it's Target, CVS, wherever you go, you're carrying the King around inside of yourself. That's your number one thing about you. And oh yeah, you're married to a pastor, and oh yeah, you're a mom, but you're a daughter of the King first. So I think that identity is the thing that sustains you more than anything. And obviously you can't go deep in your identity as the daughter of the King if you don't hang out with the King. Yeah. And so for me, when I think sustaining, I think that probably other than walking out my identity and replacing lies I hear with truth, like, oh, the church wishes I did more, or I would do this if I was a good pastor's wife, or this or that. And I go, whoa, 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 back up. I'm a daughter of the King by faith. What is my calling now as a pastor's wife? And I, for me, number one top thing, one of the hills to die on, is you got to be in the Word all of the time.
Yes.
All of the time. You are beyond quiet times. You're beyond a Sunday morning faith. God has not only called you as his daughter, but as a daughter he wants to use tremendously as a light in a broken world. And so for me, your ministry is meant to mirror your spiritual life. You can't create passion in Jesus for other people if you don't have it. So I would say, before you get to doing, you need to get to being. And so your time with the Lord is not just, yes, it sustains you, yes, it feeds you, but it's meant to be your most intimate relationship. Time with Jesus is absolutely mm-hmm. number one. And so for me personally, it's hard to say no, but I have to know one thing. I actively prioritize my time in the Word mm-hmm. over ministry, over spiritual things. And Christine and I both know this. We're not talking out of both sides of our mouths. There are things that I have to say no to so I can have deep time with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And there are times when I haven't done that right. And when I'm so exhausted and I go, wait, have I even hung out with you today, Jesus? Have I praised you once this week? Then I need to sit down with mm-hmm. him and keep that relationship absolutely paramount. So for me, being in the Word all of the time, the Word is living, it's active, it's meant to be your favorite food. And it is actually, to tell you the truth, your only food. The older I get, I feel like I constantly have this one line that rolls through my head that I'm sure somebody gave me years ago, which is, you know, every other document you read is dead, but the Word of God is alive. Mm-hmm. And Chris and I both can say this, that I can study a book of the Bible until I'm swimming in it, until it's coming out of me. And I can still read it a year later and see something brand new.
Yes.
I've never seen. And I love that because uh-huh. he gets the glory and we don't. And it's fun. I mean, it's just like, that's how you know that Word is living and active. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's meant to move in your life and it's meant to be your spiritual food. So I would say there's no doubt in my relationship. Your relationship with Jesus Christ is the most important thing in your life. It's not just from where you minister, but it's why you were created.
Yes.
That would be your number one.
Yes. So I'm thinking of two specific situations in relation to what you just said. One, sometimes pastors' wives, they marry somebody in the ministry, mm-hmm. they're new and they feel almost like a fraud. Like they don't know how to incorporate these spiritual disciplines into their life. And they're not doing that. They are doing more than being, as you describe. Mm-hmm. And so how would you encourage them to make that relationship the center point of their life? What can they do to change mm-hmm. things around?
Well, we have a group of women that all ages and stages and places spiritually, in our community that we get to hang out with. And what I love about it is that we're all in different places kind of spiritually. Like there's some older women that I want to be like when I grow up. I was telling Christine this, you know, that I go, oh my gosh, that's someone I want to be like. And then there's younger friends who are younger in ministry. I'm younger in this, but their passion for Jesus, I've been running so long, I like to hang back with them and be mm-hmm. reminded, like Revelation 2, when I had my first love with Jesus. I think if you're saying to yourself, hey, I'm a believer and I'm in this thing and I don't really understand what the heck is going on. First of all, welcome. None of us do. And anybody who acts like they do, they're not being truthful. But I would say, I would encourage you 3 or 4 times a week, read the Word, mm-hmm. read the Word by yourself. For me, I have weird time. I do it late night after all my people are asleep and I put away my phone. I turn it off. I get off all kinds of media. And my very favorite book to read in the Bible is probably in the New Testament, Colossians. And I love it for 2 reasons. One, the identity of Jesus is all over the thing. Mm-hmm. Plus the identity of the believer is all over the mm-hmm. thing. And that may sound kind of daunting to go, oh, what do I do? There are so many resources too. And I just remembered this Colossians. I have this thing, I can send it to Christine, but it's just like, basically it's a 1-minute teaching thing on each chapter. There are 4 chapters in Colossians. Paul wrote it from prison. It's huge on the identity of Jesus, which is again, most important in your life and what feeds you, but it's also your identity as a believing woman. And so each chapter has a 1-minute little thing, but I think Colossians is a great place to start. My favorite gospel is the book of John. Because when I was 19 and I did not know Jesus, I was not raised in a religious home or a church home. I read that C.S. Lewis quote that we all know, that Jesus is either who he says he is, or he's as Lord, or he's a liar or a lunatic. And I was like, whoa, I've never heard that. So for me, when I meet those kind of friends, and even now I read the book of John, not only to learn more deeply the seven names of Jesus and the seven miracles, but to constantly wash myself in his beauty in that way. Mm-hmm. And when I meet people in town who are younger in the faith, I'm like, you got to read John. Or friends that don't know Jesus, and they're like, what the heck are you talking about? Read the book of John. So I would read Colossians, but I would read John as well. And, you know, a lot of times I think we really, to be honest, I think the majority of us in Western Christianity, we listen to a lot of podcasts and conferences, and we are known for our conferences. But the bottom line is, if I'm listening to Christine Hoover or reading a Christine Hoover book, and only reading Christine and not reading the word for myself, I'm living off of Christine's faith. And that's not right. meant to sustain me.
That's right.
So hundreds of thousands of women go to Christian conferences in this country every year. And 80% of them will say, I don't read the word for myself. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you got to stop that business, because it's not just Jesus filling the speaker and the teacher, and it's Jesus filling you. It's you and your relationship with Jesus Christ. And we have to kind of cut that lazy part of us and really say it's meant to be me and him interfacing with the word. Read the book of John, write notes in your journal. Why does it say this? What is he saying? What does this mean? I know Christine has resources. I have resources. Let us know. We can get them to you. And then I would also read Colossians. Maybe those two books, read those over the next couple of years, make a plan, do it with another pastor's wife, whatever, and you can grow together. But then you own the word for yourself. And that's your first level, I think.
Mm, I am like, yes, that everything you said, I'm right there with you. Because I mean, I think you could probably say the same. There's always been a time, or there has been a time in my ministry life where I have reached the end of myself. I have nothing in myself here. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that is a buoy for me and an encouragement for my soul is Jesus himself that I meet through the word. And, you know, I only really began making it a discipline and a practice when I realized how desperate I was for what I needed to, not just to do ministry, but to do life and to have joy and peace and all the fruits that come from the Holy Spirit. So I said, I was thinking of two groups. The first one was that group we just talked about, but the second is, let's say someone who is, they do make a practice of being in the word. They are disciplined and growing spiritually, but they also feel pulled in a lot of different directions. So you mentioned earlier, you serve at a large church and y'all have multiple campuses and you have a lot of women that you pour into. And that's great. You have a lot of experience and influence that you can do that. But I'm wondering, if so many people are seeking help and encouragement and all of that from you, how do you protect your own spiritual vitality as you're constantly pouring out?
I like that you use the word vitality. I like that. That's good. I'm like, oh, I'm writing that down, vitality. Well, I think, yeah, like you said, there's, when I was on staff with Campus Crusade, now we call it Crew, there was a thing that was Bill and Von Ansbright's ministry philosophy. And it's so part of my DNA. And I think the same for Brian. That is, you pour into your leaders first, right? So the tendency for a pastor's wife, say, yeah, like Chris was saying, you're reading the word, you're in the word, you man, you're rocking, you're reading Hoover books, baby, you're doing it all. And, but you kind of feel like, okay, I'm doing a coffee here. I'm part of the widow's luncheon here. I'm the one doing the hospital calls with him here. What the heck? I'm going like this. I'm doing... But I don't seem like my life reflects Matthew 28, 18 through 20. I don't have disciples or people like that. Well, again, what's fun about a meal is not just eating the meal, but looking at everything that goes into it. Put everything on the table and say, what is one thing on this table that only I can do? For years, Brian helped me with that. He's like, I'm the only one that can be Brian's wife. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one that can be Ben's mom and Joy's mom. From there, then I'm the only one that can be Barbara and Dennis's daughter-in-law, Lee and Sharon's daughter. And then from there, I go, who's my next level of importance? We have a large church. We have a large staff. And so over the years, the bottom line is, if the staff need us first, they get us first, always, right? Because we're teammates in this. In the last 2 years, I've had a little bit more time to go back to my old school kind of way of doing stuff. My son's an Aggie. And so he said, hey, you got to meet these seven amazing, my friends, freshman girls. So I'm discipling them. And so now when I, like, let's say I'm doing, what priority was today? Well, in order, I go, Brian, okay, check, kids, check, check. I'm seeing these other girls later. And so I hang with my friend Christine right now. I think the priority listing really, really helps to understand. Mm-hmm. Now that's from a large church perspective. If you're in a smaller church perspective, you're like, Tristy, I just want 20 women. Mm-hmm. Let's get going here. And in that case, it's a different situation. When you first build a ministry, I don't care if it's through a church or a parachurch or CVS, again, you can tell we love CVS and Target. You still do the same things. I'm going to do the same things till I'm in a wooden box. Doesn't matter as a pastor's wife or what, large church, small church. I'm still going to make friends. I'm still going to share the gospel. And when someone trusts Christ and says, yo, I want to grow, I'll say, cool, let's read the book of John together. So we learn together. From there, as they read and as the two of us go, oh my gosh, we want everybody to know about that. Then they begin to get the vision for sharing the gospel and going. And then I go, oh my gosh, okay, I'm meeting with you guys. This is fun. But girl, you ready? Those are your girls now.
Yeah.
I got to go, you know, this is how you do this. I promise you, there are two things you'll never regret. One is you'll never say to yourself one day, I wish I hadn't spent so much time in the Bible. You'll never say, I wish I had never spent more time in the Bible. You'll also never say, I wish I had spent more time at the office. Mm-hmm. Right. The thing is, I don't care if you have one disciple and it's your daughter as a 4-year-old at home, or you have 45 disciples and they're college students and grad students. God's called you. This is not a perfection thing. This is a completion thing. My faith is complete when I'm drinking deeply daily from Jesus and I'm allowing him to do his thing through me, whether that's folding towels with a college girl and listening to a talk about her boyfriend problems and also talk about the word, uh-huh. or I'm speaking in front of a group of women, talking to them who are leaders and going, okay, this is how to do this next part in discipleship. I think the bottom line is that priority list will be, it's almost like when you are studying a book of the Bible and you have structure and you hang the meat between the bones, that's how your priorities are too. Mm. You know, that your husband, then your kids, then your church. I don't know if that makes any sense. Am I making sense?
Totally. Okay. I'm also wondering about boundaries, because we want to make sure that people do not become dependent upon us mm-hmm. having to teach them, pour into them. Yeah. So how do you navigate that?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because I think both Christine and I would say that we've been on both sides of that, where we, you know, where we were in a position in ministry when we didn't know what the heck to do. I remember literally being on campus at A&M and my leadership said, go start a ministry. And I was like, huh? Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew how to share my faith, but I did not know how to disciple women. Mm-hmm. And then I remember marrying a pastor and going, again, huh? You know, what do? I'm not playing the piano. I'm not singing. That's not my jam. So what do I do? But I think in these moments when we don't know what to do, like you were saying earlier, Christine, that's when we're desperate for Jesus. And so I would say, when you don't know, that's actually a prime time to build your personal strategy for your boundaries. So since I learned the hard way, I don't know if Christine would say it the same way, but I had to learn the hard way from almost losing my health to doing too much to everything that says you're an American and you should be busy 24 hours a day, mm-hmm. To being in a place of health. I would say for me personally, when I share this with pastors' wives, I always write out this one question: how do you protect your heart from anger and resentment? Mm-hmm. I think that you need to be sleeping, you need to be eating well, but honestly, I like coffee a lot, you know, so whatever. It's not your good night of sleep and your good eating and your time, you know. That self-care is great, but I think that probably the most important self-care is your self-talk care, if mm-hmm. that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So I would say you need to have those conversations with yourself where you take your emotional issue, whatever the heck it is, and you put it in front of you and look at it in a non-emotional, separated kind of a way, because then you, through Jesus, have power over it. For me personally, I know when the enemy is speaking to me and discouraging me, he always does it in first person. It's never, Tristy, you're a bad pastor's wife. Tristy, you're a bad Christian. It's, oh, if I was a better pastor's wife, I would have gone by the funeral home. Mm-hmm. Oh, if I was a better pastor's wife, I would have been over there holding their hand when they got that bad diagnosis. Mm-hmm. If I was a better pastor's wife, I'd be teaching 14 Bible studies. Okay. The enemy always speaks to you in first person. And again, once you take whatever's going on inside of you and put it outside of you and look at it through new eyes, you figure out not only the enemy's game, but your own personal true motivation. I self-care by not just for me, I need to work out. I didn't know that the first decade of ministry and my health suffered. I need to work out. And for me, I'm over 50 now. And so you kind of think to yourself, hey, man, I've seen everything, blah, blah, blah. You know, what's really fun is to have something you've never done. I've never been a runner. And when I used to speak, I'd say, I'll never be one, you know, never say never. Right. But right now that's where I'm experiencing. I get stressed out of my system. And I get to mile one, I'm telling Jesus everything I want to tell him. Mile two and three, I'm hearing him pray for everything. Pray for so-and-so in Nepal. Pray for this, pray for that. So exercise is a huge part of my self-care. I have to sleep, which I don't like that, but I have to sleep.
You have so much energy. That's probably.
Well, and that's, I mean, like, you know, I'm excited to talk with my friend Christine, but then like, as she knows, I'm going to do stuff today, but I have 2 hours every night by myself. So it's, I think our tendency, we all love Enneagram, right? I mean, it's everywhere. And we all love, you know, categorizing ourselves, but bottom line, some same tricks still work, which are you got to sleep. You got to eat pretty well. You need to probably get some exercise. And here's that point. You need to protect your heart from anger and resentment. That is one of the biggest killers of every person I know in ministry. And that's where you have to learn how to pull outside yourself. Lord, I'm doing all this physical stuff to take care of myself, but I'm still in turmoil. Mm-hmm. I'm still struggling with forgiving so-and-so. I'm still mad at so-and-so in my church. Maybe you're frustrated with your husband for putting you in the situation, right? So these are I have a thing called check your gauges. And one of them is this, are you generally angrier this year than you were last year?
Ooh.
So I'm a journal girl. I know some people are not. And what's funny is, I'm sure Christy had this too. Like some people, you'll talk to them about spiritual disciplines and they go, that's just not me. And the older I get, I kind of say what I think a little bit quicker. And I'm like, well, go ahead and start. Bottom line is, here's what you do with a journal. With a journal, you can be honest. You can be vulnerable. When I'm teaching women to do their testimony or training college students, I'm like, I want you to vomit everything onto the paper. And then you put it away. That's your own thing. Say how you really feel and walk yourself through it. So in a journal, you can ask yourself, am I angrier this year than I was last year? That's one. What's my fatigue level? Am I connecting with friends and people who build me up? Have I had time away? So for me, right there at the dishes is where I encounter the living God. And I'll be doing the dishes and I'll be praying. And I have to check my gauges. And oh man, it is a monthly battle, maybe weekly battle every other week. Of that part where you say to yourself, man, nobody understands my life. Nobody understands what we're doing for them. Nobody appreciates us, right? Nobody is thankful. And by the end of the entire cleaning the kitchen, the Lord's like, are you done? I'm like, oh, yes, I'm done. And then he always gives me the same question. And Christy knows this from this. Whenever I've had my thing out with the Lord of so-and-so doesn't appreciate me or Brian or a ministry, and let's be honest, pastors' wives, 85% of what you do, nobody is going to see it, right? Or give you this necessarily. Again, we go back to our identity. You're going to get this from Jesus and hopefully from like-minded women who love you and encourage you and go, I got you, girl. Ain't nobody else seeing that, but good job, right? You got your posse, your team, and your eternal tribe who's going to say, well done, good and faithful servant. When I'm doing those dishes, I'm walking through resentment and going, nobody knows how we're doing this. By the time I round the corner of my kitchen, the Lord's like, are you done? I'm like, yes. And then he always poses the same question to me. And I write this down in my journal. Why do I follow Jesus? Is it enough that he understands? And then the last one, he always gives me right to my business, whispers to my heart, would you really want a different life? And it's like, no. Don't you just love those signs? You're like, blah, blah, Lord, blah, blah, Jesus. And he just waits, quiet, shepherd-like. And he's like, you know, he's just there. And you give him everything truthfully. You don't speak religiously to him. You just give him all of your heart. And he sustains you, not just with his whispers, but his empowerment. He knows how you're feeling. I think a lie I believed a long time was actually what I learned from a famous old missionary who is with the Lord now and who changed my life. I love her biography, but it's better to burn out than rust out. Mm. And if I had a tattoo to symbolize my 20s, that was me. And now I know that's not exactly biblical. God gave me a body to steward and to care for. And the bottom line, again, if I'm not taking care of this, then Brian lacks encouragement or care. If I'm not taking care of this, I can't go do something with my son or my daughter. If I don't take care of this, I can't be a vessel that the Lord can use. So that helps me. I think for the majority of us that are in ministry, most women, they're good at doing the sleeping, eating, whatever, self-care stuff. You get a petty, you know what I'm saying? But it's time to do the petty time with your hearts and get that journal out and go, oh my gosh, I'm angry at this person in authority at our church who didn't honor my husband's sacrifice, which was a sacrifice for our family. Okay, that you're not, Jesus doesn't, it's not like Jesus doesn't know this happened. He knows it happened, and he also knows that you're hurt. And so you write it in that private journal. And you have two or three best friends who have known you and who you trust their walk with God, who they are confidential. We call them vaults, who have your back. And you go, and in a general way, you say, please pray for me. I'm really struggling with feeling resentment and anger and loneliness. Am I answering the question?
Yes. And actually, I was
going to not be.
I was actually going to, first of all, thank you for saying all of that. I've had those exact moments where God is saying to me, I see. And is that not enough? Is that not enough? That has to be enough. And sometimes it's not enough for me. And that does lead to bitterness. But that is that question centers me back to, why am I doing what I'm doing? Am I doing it so people will applaud, or am I doing it as a servant of Christ? So I appreciate you saying that. You've also brought up several times other people, the importance of other people in your life. And can you speak to that as far as your spiritual vitality and kind of dealing with some of these things that come up emotionally?
Yeah. Christine and I both know that, you know, obviously, I think the biggest push in churches in America right now is for community. And you see a ton of it in the younger population. You know, I'm going to say younger, now is under 30. But I feel like many times I hear the words fellowship and community more than I hear Bible study sometimes. And to me, a healthy relationship with anyone involves both. You know, you want your key 2, 3, 5 closest girlfriends. They don't just listen to you vent. They don't just take on your business. They don't just shoulder the burden. But their walk with God attracts you.
Yes.
Like literally, Brian, I love people and I love friends that we work together and God has blessed us with great, great relationships. But I literally do have like a core group of closest friends and then another level and then another level. And the bottom line is that middle, that the closest friends in my life, I would ask you this. Who do you ask when you're sending a text while heck is breaking loose and you send a text, who do you text first for prayer? That would be a person that is one of those best closest friends. That's a relationship you need to cultivate because they get it. I had this whole thing of, it's fun to have lots of, most women I talk to, they're like, I only have 2 friends. Well, the issue is not how many friends, right? It's what kind of friend. So you could have 2 dear, deep, rock solid sisters who you want to be someday and you're rich, right? Or you could have 55 pseudo girlfriends who are competitive and gossipy and they just fuss all the time. I would say even in these moments, you know, Chris and I are talking about getting away from, you know, how I'm feeling, putting it out on table and really planning my way through this calling. I would say who you hang out with is who you become. And there are a lot of Christian women who are not thankful. And Christine and I have both been those women and will probably be these women. I'm talking about the women who are, it is a constant for them. There's a constant restlessness and need to create drama. There's a constant discussion about her husband's faults. There's a constant comment on your appearance. There's a constant comment on your leadership. Well, since you guys are the pastors, right? Those are not safe friendships for you. Yeah. You want to have friends. Again, for me, if the friends at the very, very center of my life, they're the women that I want to be. Like they have parts that I don't have. And in the body of Christ, we all know this, right? First Corinthians, they complete me. Let's say I have this gift and my other friend has this gift. Together we're whole. But I evaluate a friendship now, honestly, I'm not a phone talker. I just would prefer to text, whatever. But when I do, when I'm like, if I hang up with Christine right now, I will walk away from this feeling encouraged. Why? Because I know her walk with the Lord. I know her character. I know her marriage, her kids. I know how she walks with Jesus and that she's trustworthy. When I hang up with one of my closest friends on the phone, I'm like, man, let's take it. Let's take the world for Jesus. Those yeah. are to be your closest, closest friends. Mm-hmm. And obviously, Christine, I know this too. They won't come to you. You know, I think that's a big thing as pastors' wives. We have the tendency of going, well, nobody's reaching out to me. You know what? If Jesus raptures the church in 5 years, we don't have time for that. Right? We don't have time for going, well, I need someone to reach out to me. I need someone to call me. And I understand the pain of this because I would imagine some friends would say, Tristy, I'm trying. I'm calling. I'm asking for coffee. I'm doing this. I'm whatever. I'm that. And I would say, keep on. Mm-hmm. Keep on. Mm-hmm. But add maybe something special, which is say, Jesus, I've got to have you intervene in this situation. I need one friend. I need two friends who are believers, who want to have good marriages, who don't just want to use me at the church and suck me dry, that our entire relationship is not me counseling them, mm-hmm. that they don't pull me into flesh issues, but that, man, when I'm with them, I feel closer to you. They invigorate me. They're trustworthy and they'll call me on the carpet when I need it. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's the biggest thing. I talk to people that are like, I'm trying. I'm like, well, did you ask him? Like, well, we forgot to pray. And so get yourself a sister to pray. Christine will pray. I'll pray. Mm-hmm. But ask God to give you mm-hmm. that. He delights in giving community and fellowship to his people. It may not be the way you think it might be. It yeah. might be that elderly neighbor across the street who's a widow. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I need your wisdom. Always keep your eyes open for that, but you yeah. keep putting yourself out there. You keep initiating, ask him to give you eyes of wisdom and ask yourself, man, when I leave so-and-so's presence, I feel on fire for the yeah. Lord. And that's a trustworthy friend mm-hmm. that I want to be like.
Everyone listening is like, now I get why Christine wanted to talk to Tristy because she is a firecracker and just the wisdom is so, it just pours out of you. And we know that's from the Lord that he's given you experience and, mm-hmm. and insight. So thank you for that. And I do have two more questions. One, there might be people who are listening to you who are thinking, wow, she's on fire and she's got this big church and this big ministry and influence. And I just wonder, could you tell us, have you ever had seasons where you felt unfruitful and maybe dry spiritually, and what was that season like and how did you come through that?
I like how you said unfruitful and dry. You know what I might say is I would say there's never a dry season that's unfruitful. Hmm. We would agree with that because that dry season draws you in new ways. I was telling Christine, you know, for a lot of us, I as I'm listening to Christine say in kind, encouraging things, part of the strength that you may hear and part of that vitality, to use Chris's word, is endurance. And the bottom line is all of this does not happen if you don't know how to suffer behind the scenes. You know, we're promised persecution as believers. And for many of us, we've never seen it. There's something to that. But I do think that for me, I turned 50 a couple of years ago. And my thing was that I've never memorized a book of the Bible, right? Ever. Hey, how's that for you? Ministry 25 years, never memorized a book of the Bible. So for my gift to myself, I was like, I want to try. And I will tell you, it about kicked my tail in because I literally, it was the book of James and I'm sitting in my closet every night and I'm going line by line and telling the Lord the entire time, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. And it took a long time, but it's one of my very favorite things. And everybody thinks about James and they go, I know, Tristy, count it all joy, my brethren, face trials of many kinds. So the testing of your faith produces endurance. We stop there. The next part of that is the most important part. The book is written to believers, not to unbelievers, which I think is powerful. And so James, whose nickname was Camel Knees because of how often he prayed, which I love, he doesn't want us to take part of his text, but all of it. So the end of that verse in verse 1:3, is so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Now, perfect does not mean perfect. I swear, I was just at a conference this weekend. Christine knows this. And if I hear more people use the word, well, I'm not perfect. You know what? I think we should strike that word from our language, because nobody has the same definition of perfect. And sometimes we use it as an excuse. That's not, James is not saying perfect and perfect here. He's saying complete and complete, mm-hmm. mature and mature. Mm-hmm. But that little phrase, so that you may lack nothing. My sister passed away 2 years ago, very, very, very hard situation. And grief levels you and sorrow levels you. Christine knows this. We lived through a lot of infertility, a lot of miscarriage, and that deepens your faith. It's not, you really walk with a quiet carpenter in those moments. Western Christianity is on a stage with a mic and music and all this and ripped jeans, right? Blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is, when trial comes and pain comes, you have to discipline yourself to go to Him first, because that is the only thing. His presence is meant to sustain you. Jehovah Shema, that's one of my very favorite things about Jesus. It's from the Old Testament to the New Testament. He's with His people. Old mm-hmm. Testament tabernacle, New Testament Emmanuel. Even last night, I was just telling Brian, I'm like, there are verses that I have known for years that I missed. Little phrases, when Jesus said, when He calls the 12 and He says, He calls them for two reasons. I always jump to reason two, to preach the gospel. The first part of that is that they would be with Him. Mm. I think there's something beautiful and glorious and deep, and that the saints of old, I love church history, I love missionary biographies, that they had a handle on that we don't. Mm. And that is that we run from suffering. We run from sorrow. We run from persecution. We go, what the heck? This is inconvenient, Lord. Mm-hmm. But I will say, it's a recent trial that we've walked through. The Spirit just brought that back to me, that James 1. He's like, that one part, not count it all joy. I know the religious thing to say there, but that, see, you may be complete and complete, lacking in nothing. And it was very strong. I feel like He was like, I don't want you to lack in abundance. Mm. And so I think it's reframing that. Again, who do you ask for prayer? If anything, my people, I probably drive them nuts, because I text prayer requests to our 10 pals who pray, couples, all the time. But it's created this intimacy and trust, and they did the same with us. And so I can literally tell you the hour that people start praying for us sometimes. Mm. You know, whether it's like, suffering and trial never happens like, okay, we're ready. Got my shield of faith up. Ephesians 6, baby. I did Priscilla's book. How to do this. But we were at a conference recently, and we walked into our hotel room, and we got a text message at 10:30 that a friend had taken his own life. Mm. And you're exhausted anyway. And there's nothing left. And I fell to my knees and just bawled. And we loved this person. A part of life knew him, saw his life change for Jesus, his family, everything. And so that's life. Mm. That's life. Mm-hmm. And that's reality. And you have to say that's part of the Christian life, but that's not the only part of the Christian life, mm-hmm. right? Because beauty comes from ashes. The people you love the most, again, the book of James, consider the outcome of their faith. You know, Job, we know God is merciful and compassionate. He doesn't allow us to go through trial or loneliness or pain or insecurity if He doesn't have something that's just right behind that valley. Mm-hmm.
Well, one final question comes to mind, and this is something I actually get asked quite a bit, is who pours into you? So all mm-hmm. this talk we've been talking, you've been talking this whole time mm-hmm. about so much that you pour out and that it mm-hmm. comes from the Lord, but who do you go to in, mm-hmm. in moments, or do you, I think of David that he encouraged himself in the Lord. Mm-hmm. So how do you think about that? Who pours into me?
Well, one time, I think you were, when did you graduate, Christine?
From college?
Yeah.
98.
Okay. So I was here. Yeah. And we were doing college ministry at the time. Cause I got married in 96 and we started in 98. The number one question that I got asked from girls, I had 335 college girls one year that wanted to be discipled and mentored. And I turned around and I asked the adult women in our congregation. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so great. You guys, we have 300 something girls who want to be discipled or mentored. So who will take so-and-so and who will take so-and-so? Not a hand went up. And I was like, huh? And so that became a navigation, seriously, like an expedition, because all of a sudden I realized older women think, like we said earlier, they have to be perfect and complete and have this glorious, successful Western Christian life before they think they can pour into somebody. A, not true. B, they think, oh, I've struggled, therefore I'm not someone else can learn from. Baloney. My thing is, if you are alive, if you're breathing, if you are reading the word and you love Jesus, you need to have younger friends. You need to have younger friends in ministry, out of ministry, that they get to see how this thing is done. And it's not the perfection police. It's not, we're great, whatever. I have women all the time, older women, they're like, but I can't do anything. Have a younger pastor's wife, a young woman in your room. When I'm off the scene, I want my girls to be there, right? I was on staff of Crusade, but at Oklahoma State, where I went to college, my friend Sandy Ireland discipled me. And then I came down here and we just went running. But the biggest question I get from college girls is they would say, okay, I want somebody to disciple me. I had no adult women to do it because we had yet to, in a sense, climb that mountain that said you have to be perfect. Now we have connections and it's like, I don't care if you're folding towels with a college girl, get them in your house.
Yeah.
You know, and vice versa. But you can't do what you can't do. And so before we had a lot of older women kind of step up and be willing to just go, oh my gosh, I never saw this for what it could be and see their lives changed. We had those middle years. And all of a sudden I was thinking, what the heck? We're just gonna have to learn how to disciple ourselves. So I told these college girls, you need to learn how to, you all have signed up all year for a mentor discipler. I can't give you one, but while you wait, you need to disciple yourself. And what is it? It's exactly what we've been saying. You disciple yourself by being in the word. You disciple yourself by having an active prayer life. You disciple yourself by talking about Jesus with your friends. You disciple yourself by being around others who you want to be like. You disciple yourself when you say, how do I die today to my own needs and wants? And so college girls, but a lot of women who graduate from college, they're all over the country, all over the world, working jobs. And they would say, hey, who's going to pour into me, Tris? And it's like, you know, I don't know the answer to that. It may not look the way that you think it's going to look. My college girls now, before I had children, I would do regular kind of times. This year, I do it totally differently. Every season and every phase is totally different. And so how much time I give them corporately, you don't have to do a Bible study every week, a one-on-one every week. You can do it however. And so you make it your own kind of a plan. Like literally in about an hour, I'm going to pick up one of my girls with her favorite cup of coffee. We're going to sit in the car and hang out and talk. So I don't see people I know at the restaurant and she doesn't see college students at the restaurant and there's no interruption. So you kind of make this your plan. So I would say you pour into yourself by pouring into yourself, right? Be around, I mean, like, you know enough to do this thing.
Thanks so much for listening to By Faith, friends. And remember that you can find Tracy's journal questions and resources in the show notes. You can always find those show notes on my website, christinehoover.net. Join me next week as I speak with Garrett Kell. Garrett has been on the podcast before sharing his story. He's a pastor in Alexandria, Virginia, and he joins me to discuss how we can help create authenticity in the culture of the church where we serve, where people can share openly what is really going on with them and receive in return both grace and truth. It's a fine line to walk well, and Garrett helps us think through that from a leader's perspective. Until then, friends, have a great week and keep walking forward by faith.